This is one of my favorite Sundays in the year as we gather together for worship to recognize those deacons who have served us so well in past years, to acknowledge those who are continuing their servant ministry in the church, and then to set apart new ones and to install other deacons who will be helping our church to live into the profession of faith that we just sang. It's not about us. It's not what I can do. It's instead what Christ does through me, what Christ does through us. And to have leaders who model that is such an important part of what an exemplary church expresses. There are two places in the New Testament where deacons are mentioned. The first is in the book of Acts, where in the sixth chapter of Acts, the church recognizes the need to set apart some servant leaders who will make sure that no one in the congregation is neglected. And that's precisely what the church does. Then in 1 Timothy, Paul's first letter to his protege Timothy, in the third chapter, he talks about the importance of setting apart individuals in the church who manifest a certain level of maturity, who are examples to the rest of the congregation about what it means to follow Jesus. And here at Mountain Brook Baptist Church, we are so blessed to have servant leaders who are here to make sure that needs in our congregation are met, and for these persons to be models of maturity in terms of how they have been and will continue to grow in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord Jesus. In this section are those deacons who have served us for the last 3 years and are now rotating off. Will you please stand if you've been serving as a deacon and are rotating off so that we can recognize you? Please stand at this time. Thank you so very much for your service. And over to my far right are those who are continuing their term of service. We appreciate so much the difference that you are making in the life of our church. Will you please stand so that we might recognize you? Thank you. And then in our center section, we have two individuals who will be recognized later in the service as life deacons. We have four who are going to be ordained today, whom I will recognize in a moment. And then others who are being installed. They will begin their term of service. If you are beginning your term of service this year, would you please stand so that we could recognize you? Thank you so very much. The names of those persons who are beginning their term of service are listed in the order of worship, and I would invite you to be in prayer for them as we continue to move forward in this good year that God has for us to know. We have four this morning whom we will be ordaining, setting apart for this important place of ministry in the life of our Mountain Brook Baptist Church: Bob Berryhill, Matt Rich, Mary Watkins, and Brian White. I would invite all of you to come at this time. One of the special aspects of this service for me is to hear just a word of testimony from each of the candidates that helps us to know their heart for this important role that God has given them. As they share this morning, lift them up in prayer and be inspired by how God may speak to you and call you to a special place of service because of their testimony.
Morning. Over the last year, I've had an occasion to write out my personal testimony. It's been an interesting experience to put pen to paper and look back over a life and look at those moments where God has been very active in my life and even those moments when I have not been so active in his. I grew up in the South. I grew up in a family that, as my personal testimony says, going to church on Sunday was just something that we did. Sunday morning church, dinner with grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. That's just the way I grew up. That environment led me to an early profession of faith and baptism as a child. I'm very grateful and thankful to a family that raised me in a Christian home. I am more grateful to a God who sanctified me, who sent the Holy Spirit to indwell within me and put his seal upon me early in life. My family moved here to Birmingham in 1975. That wasn't just a long time ago, that was 45 years ago. We joined this church, and I remember shortly after joining this church, standing here before the congregation as we had returned from a youth trip. This was a special retreat for me because it was the first time that I really recall and remember God's presence in my life. It wasn't some burning bush experience. It was more of a general revelation as God revealed to me his presence and the work that he was doing in my life and the work that he thankfully continues to do this day. Mountain Brook Baptist Church has been my home for many years. I am thankful for the church, and I appreciate the opportunity to serve in the church. Two ministries of which I would like to mention just briefly. First is the contemporary service. About 10 years ago, I started serving in the contemporary service, doing the videos, the music, the lyrics, and the notes, and the slides. I've come to appreciate that opportunity to serve the church, and I continue to do so. Another ministry that's meant so much to me is Builders for Christ, a group of lay people coming together to work in the mission, the ministry of church construction. I've been doing this for about 7 years now. Not only do we get the opportunity to build a church, a tool that God will use for his purpose, but we have the opportunity to work with other churches and other team members from across the very nation, building relationships that will last us an eternity. And so today, I thank you for the opportunity to serve the church.
Good morning. So I would like to start off by saying to the few, two or three, or more than that, that have come up to me this morning, that have said, Matt, remember, 3 minutes or less, and we don't think you can do it. My reputation precedes me. So I will say, for those of you that are out there that have heard about that, I wrote this down. So it will not be a sermonette this morning. Maybe a small one. We'll see. But thank you so much for the opportunity for being here this morning. I'm both honored and humbled to be standing before you this morning. Many of you may know me, but some of you may not. And first off, I have a wonderful wife, Sarah, my children, Micah and Abby. Quite frankly, my daughter is more famous in this church than my wife, myself, or Micah in here. And then it's a pleasure to have being joined by family today, my mom and dad, brother, his wife, my beautiful nieces, and my wife's parents. I had the pleasure and blessing of growing up in a faith-centered Christian home. My parents appreciated their role as faith leaders for my brother and I, and church was a non-negotiable aspect of my upbringing, something that, Bob, I know that you appreciate too. Sundays and Wednesday nights were set apart for church functions. I was taught the importance of the community of believers in the Christian's life and the impact and significance of a family devotion time and what it really means to selflessly serve the church family. All of these lessons were taught not only by words, but by my parents living out their faith. And I met my beautiful wife at Samford University, and after marrying, we moved to Kentucky for a while, but settled back here in Birmingham, attending Mountain Brook Baptist Church for a little over a year, before moving to South Carolina. And that's where this story takes a turn. The knock on the door was rather unexpected. Sarah and I were moving into a new home in South Carolina, and we had not moved in yet, so I was spending a couple of Saturdays previous to our moving, updating the house with a fresh coat of paint. And hearing the knock at the door my expectation was to meet a new neighbor coming to welcome us to the community. While opening the door, I found nothing of the sort. However, what did greet me changed my life and it challenged my faith in a way I never expected. I was greeted by two young men, white shirts, dark slacks, name tags affixed to those shirts. Of course, it would be my luck that I wouldn't be greeted by something like the publisher's clearinghouse with a big check. Instead, I'm welcomed by two Mormon missionaries. I didn't turn them away. I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to learn about the faith I never really knew about. And I had seen their commercials and was intrigued by their use of Jesus Christ in their name. And over the next couple of months, Sarah and I invited them into our home on a weekly basis for dinner and conversation. And little did I know, this was a time that God was sovereignly using for my growth. And I thought my faith was built upon a solid foundation. I had a firm grip, or at least I assumed that I did, on what I believed. But the question remained, why did I believe it? Now, we are instructed to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, souls, and mind. However, upon meeting with these two young men, over the course of our time together, it struck me. My heart may be fully engaged, but my mind was idling in intellectual neutral. You know, in his book, Tim Keller, he has a book, The Reason for God. He encourages his readers to take a second look at doubt and discusses the fruit borne by it in believers. And I think it's worth noting. He says that a faith without some doubts is like a human body without antibodies in it. People who blithely go through life too busy or too indifferent to ask hard questions about why they believe as they do will find themselves defenseless against either the experience of tragedy or the probing questions of a smart skeptic. A person's faith can collapse overnight if he or she has failed over the years to listen patiently to their own doubts, which should only be discarded after long reflections. Believers should acknowledge and wrestle with doubts, not only their own, but their friends and their neighbors. And it's no longer sufficient to hold beliefs just because we inherited them. Only if you struggle long and hard with objections to your faith will you be able to provide grounds for your beliefs to skeptics, including yourself, that are plausible rather than ridiculous or offensive. Keller's observations fits well into my experience with the LDS missionaries. Questions they asked raised more questions for me. I found myself researching for hours the comparisons of the LDS church and Christianity. I read LDS scriptures. I listened to speakers from their general conference. I read anything and everything that I could get my hands on concerning the LDS faith. And in doing this research, I found a far greater treasure than my initial goal of rebutting their claims. The embers of my faith were being stoked by the challenges put forward by these two young men. Now, little did I know these embers would be set aflame and a calling placed upon my life. Fast forward to today, and I stand before you about to finish my coursework for a Master's of Arts in Christian Apologetics from New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary this May. That is, of course, as the old saying goes, the Lord willing and the creek don't rise. Although apologetics has the modern-day connotation of saying, I'm sorry, the discipline of apologetics lends its meaning from the Greek on which it is based. Apologia, meaning a defense or reasoned case. For many of you in here that are lawyers, you would probably appreciate understanding this very well. We see this in 1 Peter 3:15, wherein Peter states, in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy. Always being prepared to make a defense, there's that word, to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope, that being the confident expectation that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. I realize that some of you may be sitting here today as I was, going through life too busy, too indifferent to ask the hard questions about your beliefs, idling and intellectual neutral. If that is you, may I encourage you to begin the journey of seeking out a reasoned answer for the hope that is in you. Finally, this to all of you. The next time you hear, Christian, what do you believe? Ask yourself, Christian, why do I believe it? For in answering the second, you will more fully appreciate the answer to the first.
It is an honor to be chosen to be one of your deacons, one I never expected. I love my church, and for many years I've only tried to help where I felt I could and where I was needed. I have been a member of the same Sunday school class for over 30 years. We've gotten to know each other really well over those years, even though the membership has changed. In our lesson today, Paul is reminding the Corinthians that the church focus is Christ, that all we do as a church is to teach Christ. And one of the wonderful ways we do it here at Mountain Brook Baptist Church, and I was confident that the guys would not pick this particular one, is Vacation Bible School. Although we do have some guy helpers for Vacation Bible School. I'm one of those people who doesn't remember when I was not in church. One of my earliest memories is my mother pinching me to be still in big church. And I won't ask you to raise your hand to see if any of y'all have been pinched in big church. But one of my other early memories is red Kool-Aid at Vacation Bible School. People didn't know that you really didn't need to give red Kool-Aid to kids at that point in time. Vacation Bible School is a fond memory and activity for my children, my grandchildren, and me. And I still help. I mean, there is a place for everybody in this church. I have been fortunate to serve in different churches in different positions with Vacation Bible School. The 1 or 2 weeks, as it used to be in the past, are always fun. Mountain Brook Baptist is fortunate to have a very capable, caring staff that helps the volunteers give what they need to have for this job. And it makes it fun. Unless you come and see, you will never know all of the activities that go on during Vacation Bible School. There are games, there are stories, there are arts and crafts. There are lots of different ways that the Bible is taught in Vacation Bible School. And the church does an excellent job of that. Our church has many places for helpers, and as a deacon, I hope to continue to help wherever I can to serve both church members, leaders, and Christ.
Well, that's a tough act to follow. I'll try not to bore you too bad. So when I was asked to give a testimony, I was originally a little worried what I would say. I don't have the road to Damascus moment where you're struck by the power of the Holy Spirit so obviously that you've just got to respond. Rather, I've got 1,000 little moments, most of them here in this church. Like Bob, I spent a lot of my formative years here. My family moved to Mountain Brook when I was in second grade. Shortly thereafter, we began attending Mountain Brook Baptist. I was baptized in this pool, except there wasn't a step here, so I almost drowned, I felt like. Every Christmas, I was either an angel or a shepherd in the Living Nativity. One memorable night, as I was instructed to walk up the manger and kneel behind the cow. But I guess nobody told the cow. So I'm sitting back there, and the cow starts backing up. And this was in the days when it was on the hill. And so the cow's backing up. And I'm backing up, and I was afraid that I was going to wind up at the bottom of the hill. We'd had this crazy little dance going for a little while, and at the end of the night, my mom asked me, well, who was that kid moving up there in the Living Nativity? It was me. I'm really blessed that today I get to share that activity with my kids today. And I actually, just 2 years ago, graduated to Wise Man, so it was really nice. As a result of that experience, the voice of Dr. Nelson will always sound like the voice of Christmas to me. I'm sure a lot of you have the same sort of feelings, that it's not Christmas until I hear Dr. Nelson's voice. I spent countless hours in this building growing up. If the doors were open, we were probably here. Choir practice, Sunday school, recreation nights, lock-ins. They all left an indelible mark. Wednesday night supper was a must attending for a long time. My mom was a great cook, and she enjoyed it. So I was always wondered why we would eat dinner on church on Wednesday nights. As a father of four kids myself, I think I understand now. My brothers and I could eat a lot. And so she probably just needed a break. The CLC was always a great gathering place. I enjoyed church league basketball, where my jump shot left just entirely too much to be desired. But I enjoyed the camaraderie of teammates and friends. And did I tell you the story about how I broke my arm roller skating? We'll skip that one for today. Mission trips, ski trips, lake trips, these were always the highlight of the year. But invariably, things would always go wrong. The bus broke down on the way to Phoenix. It was really hot. The wipers on a different bus broke on a snowy trip to Sugar Mountain. And I had a front row seat as the bus driver picked up a stick from the side of the road and used it to connect the good wiper to the bad wiper. And that way, we got to the top of the hill. Most importantly, leaders such as the Kales, the Wills, all of them, Lal Namar, and many others taught me not only about the Bible, but showed me what it meant to be a follower of Jesus through their actions. Come to think of it, they still are today. I guess you could sum it up that Mountain Brook Baptist Church family has played an important role in my life and my faith. And for that, I'm extremely thankful.
Well, it's clear from your testimonies that this church has blessed each of you in a special way. And we know now that you are going to return that blessing by investing yourself in this leadership role. And we look forward to how all of us together will be better Christ followers because of how you show us the way. Thank you for the word that you've shared. You may return to your seat.